today's topic, Srimad Bhagavatam, to the subject today, which is the holy name, Naam, Satsanga, Krishna Seva, Bhagavat, the Naam. So this is a very, shastrically speaking, very logical progression. The Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, ends the last verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. States, Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Papa Pranasana. That means that by Nama Sankirtan, all sins, Sarva Papa means all kinds of sins, Pranasanam, are destroyed. By taking to this Nama Sankirtan. There is, of course, the famous verse about the Yuga Dharma that Kalo Nidhe. Kalayadoshi Nidhe Raja. Asti Eka Bahadur, Kirtanya Deva Krishna Singh, Mukta Sangha Param Jet. So, we are in this Kali Yuga, it is Nidhe Dosha, it is an ocean of faults, an ocean of problems. But there is one way, there is one good quality, Mahaguna, one good quality about this age, that there is a very sweet and simple way to get free, Mukta Sangha, to get liberated. Kirtanya Deva Krishna, and that is to chant the holy names of Sri Krishna. So that is there, and of course the prediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna Varnam, Visa Krishna, Sangopangasta Parshadam, that is given in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, we can say that the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is Nama Kirtan. Kirtan, the root is Kirti. So Kirtan actually means to glorify. So it is a great glorification of the holy names of Krishna, because as Prabhupada said, the names of Krishna, they appear in terms of his pastimes. Krishna is known as Gopal. Why? Why does he have the name Gopal? Because he exhibits the leela of a cowherd boy. Krishna is known as Govardhana Dhari, the lifter of Govardhan Hill, because of that pastime everyone has seen. The painting of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. So, Krishna has so many names which appear out of his pastimes. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, as Prabhupada translates the title, Srimad Bhagavatam, meaning the beautiful story of the personality of Godhead. This is the account, the narrative of Krishna's pastimes. So, as we go through the 10th canto, the 12 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, going pastime after pastime after pastime, we are seeing the meaning of the Lord's names. Why does he have the name Trivikram? Trivikram, that in three steps he traversed the universe. That is revealed in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the pastime of Lord Nominative. So, in this way, the Bhagavatam is glorifying by recounting all these wonderful leelas, glorifying the names of the Lord. And the Bhagavatam is giving numerous wonderful, specific glorifications of the holy name of Krishna, and of the process of chanting the holy name. glorifications and profound instructions. Right off in the first canto, first chapter, near the beginning, I think it's text 13, is Apana Samsritin Goram Yonama Vivasho Grinan. So, the living entities, Apana Samsritam Goram, they are caught in this cycle of samsara, Goram, which is very horrible for them. It plunges them in untold suffering. So many horrible circumstances. Therefore, that word Gora is used. It means horrible. But this verse says, Yannama Vidasho Grinan, if someone takes the holy name, chants the holy name, Yannama Vivasho, Vivasho means even unconsciously, even without intending to chant the holy name. And we know the example from 6th canto of Bhagavatam, Ajanga. He did not intend to chant the holy name of Narayan, the personality of Godhead. He was calling his son. So this is an example of unconscious or unaware chanting. So even if one chants in that way, tatas sadyo vimuchet. It's sadya means immediately. Tatas sadya vimuchet. Immediately he is delivered from the suffering material condition of life. Why is that? A very interesting last point. Yad viveti svayam bhayam. Because the holy name is feared by fear itself. There is nothing more powerful than Krishna's holy name. Then there's Ittam Nirvidyamananam Ichitam Kutobayam Yoginam Nripaninatam Harinamanu Kirtanam. This is another very wonderful verse in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which says, again, explaining the dharma of chanting the holy name, that one may be yoginam, one may be a yogi, very fixed up in spiritual discipline. One may be nirvidyamanam, he may be free of all material attachment. Or he may be ichitam, he may be full of all kinds of material desires. You see? So someone may, in other words, have no spiritual qualifications at all, be an ordinary person whose heart is full of desires. Someone may be a practicing yogi, that means he's accepted discipline to get rid of these desires, and someone may actually be free of all desires. But for all three, the recommendation, nirnitam, means the conclusion. Nripta, nirnitam, harinamanu kirtanam. Everyone should chant the holy name of Krishna if they desire to achieve the goal of life. Then in third canto, Mother Devahuti, she speaks another well-known, often quoted verse, O Bhatta Svapachoti Garyan Yajivagre Vartate Namatubhyam Tipus Tipus Tipas Te Juhu Shastra Arya Ramanatur Nama Granti Ete. It's another very important verse because it says anyone who is chanting the holy name of the Lord, even though they may have been in this lifetime born as Svapacha, means dog eater, so very low birth. And in Kali Yuga, of course, almost everyone is born in that way, in a very low, barbaric type of culture. But Mother Devahuti says that if such a svapacha, low-born dog eater, even worse, cow eater, so such a low-born person, if they're chanting the holy name of the Lord, then tipus tipas tejuru, that he must have performed very, very severe austerities in his last life, Shashnu Arya, he must be an Aryan in his previous lifetime. He must have come to the very top of the Vedic culture as a Brahmana, as one who is qualified to perform all sacrifices. So what Devahuti is saying, that if someone chants the holy name, then their low birth is not to be considered. They must be considered to be the most advanced transcendentalist. And in the sixth canto, this is the chapters 1, chapters 2, the beginning of sixth canto is very important for our study of the importance of the holy name, because this is where the pastime of Ajamiya is narrated. So we find there that one may chant the holy name, Sanketa. Sanketa, this means indirectly, like Ajamiya. Ajamiya, he was, in his mind, he was speaking the name of his son, who he happened to name Narayan. Narayan is a common name in India, even today. So, he indirectly chanted the holy name. He wasn't addressing Narayan, he was addressing his son. So this is called Sanketa. Then there is another type of way to chant, Parihasam, as a joke. You see, sometimes a devotee, when they go into the town on Harinam, then people see and say, oh, they laugh. Ah, look at these crazy Hare Krishnas. They, you know, nudge their friend. Ah, look, there's the Hare Krishnas. Ha, 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 ha. So it's a source of amusement to see the devotees. So they're not taking the devotees seriously. They're not taking the holy name seriously. It's just a thing, you know, like seeing circus clowns or something. You know, some funny people in funny dress with funny haircuts, doing something strange, funny. So they laugh at that. But this is registered in Bhagavatam, Parihasam. Stobam means, and there are some people who, they like the kirtan for the music. You see, this is called, this type of appreciation is stobam. And they may chant along because they like the melody, they like the sound of the instruments, especially bhajan, very sweet or mystical sounding Indian bhajan style. They like that. But for them it's musical entertainment. They're still not taking the chanting seriously. But they may chant along just because they like the music. And then there's helanam, to chant neglectfully, to as a put down, as an insult. You see? Like I heard, someone told me that in Amsterdam, yes, I think it was in Amsterdam, years ago, at the height of the hippie time, of course Amsterdam is still in the hippie times, pretty much. But there was, you know, the big era of the hippies in the late 60s, early 70s. So, among the hippies of Amsterdam, they had an expression. If something is totally crazy, something totally out of, you know, all normal thinking, they would say, boy, that's really Hare Krishna. Or some person, oh, he's really Hare Krishna, means he's really crazy, really far out, really wacko, really gone. So this would be an example of helanam. It's kind of neglectful, it's kind of, you know, dismissive. It's not respectful to the holy name. But Bhagavatam here in this beginning of sixth canto states that any one of these types of chanting, ashesha agaharam, so agha means horrible sinful activities. Ashesha means endless. So one may have performed endless horrible sinful activities. But if he chants the holy name, even in these ways, Sanketa Parihasham Shtobha Helanam. Then Haram. All of those sinful activities are destroyed. So Bhagavatam is really giving us so much insight into the power of the holy name. And another important lesson from this, the same part of the Bhagavatam, beginning of sixth canto, is that there are other processes like severe austerities and so on that will destroy sinful reactions. So it's not only that one must chant the holy name to destroy sinful reactions. There are other processes that will do that, that are prescribed in the Vedas. But the chanting of the holy name is unique among all these processes. Why? Because this is the only one that actually goes to the root of the sin in the heart. Other things, you see, to perform severe austerities, this prayaschitta, atonement, fasting, to take a vow of brahmacharya, to stay in a holy place, to bathe in the Ganga again and again and again. Yes, they'll wash off the sinful reactions, but the root of the sin, the reason why we are inclined to commit sin, and this is explained in detail by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that we have these bijas, these seeds of sinful desire. They're stored in our subconscious, the ignorance of our subconscious, avidya. They're stored down there where we can't get at them because they're covered by unconsciousness. We have no, covered by ignorance. We have no access to them. We don't know where they are, but they're there. And then they appear in the conscious mind, first as thoughts, and then they take root in the mind. They're called bija, and they grow. And in this way, they become papa, sinful activities. And then papa breeds reactions. Subtle reactions, mental distress, and gross reactions that we have to take in our body. And this is the material condition of life. That these sinful desire seeds are always coming into the mind. We can't stop them. See, the person who is not connected to Krishna by bhakti yoga, a person who is just awash in the modes of material nature, he can't stop himself from performing sinful activities. So he may, if he's pious, he may feel bad about that. After he does some sinful activity, he feels very ashamed. And so you see also in Western religion, they have some provision for atonement. He can go to a priest and confess like the Catholics do. Father, please forgive me, I have sinned. And then he tells his sins in the confession box. And then the priest tells him, gives him some atonement. This is called in Sanskrit, prayaschitta. So the same thing is there in the Vedic religion, in Hinduism. One goes to a brahmana, the village brahmana, the village priest, and confesses, I did something bad. And then the brahmana, he prescribes some atonement. And so they feel, they feel, yes, I have defeated this sinful reaction. They feel better about themselves. But the problem is that the sinful propensity, it's called kuta, the sinful propensity is still there in the heart. And so the next week he does another sin, and he has to come back. So the chanting of the holy name, out of all these processes that are useful for ridding oneself of the reactions of sin, the chanting of the holy name is the only process that actually goes into the heart and removes the very cause of the sinful desire. So these and many more glorifications and instructions, valuable instructions, on the holy name are given in Srimad Bhagavatam. What I would like to do now is offer you a summary. This is a summary given by Srila Raghunath Das Goswami in the Namastikam. So it's 8 verses glorifying the holy name, and in these verses we find a summary of the Bhagavatam instruction on the process of chanting Hare Krishna. So, first it says, Raghunath Das Goswami says that the Upanishads worship the holy name. And the holy name is adored by Narada and by Srila Shukadeva Goswami. Would someone like to try to explain the significance of this? This is Raghunath Das Goswami telling us about the position of the holy name. What is the significance of this? Looking back on what we were saying yesterday about the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the Upanishads glorify the holy name, and the holy name is adored by Narada and by Srila Shukadeva Goswami. Someone like to offer?
The holy name is to be attractive also for the persons who are engaged in philosophical.
Well, that's true, but what I was thinking of was, we mentioned yesterday how the Srimad Bhagavatam is the commentary on Vedanta. And Vedanta means these Upanishads. So the holy name is in the same position. The Upanishads, they are actually persons ultimately. Upanishads are spoken by great sages. These Upanishads, they glorify the holy name of the Lord. So in the same way, the Upanishads, the crown of all Vedanta is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And similarly, Bhagavatam was inspired by Narada Muni. He inspired Vyasadeva to compose the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Shukadeva Goswami is the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. And both of these great persons were so intimate with the Srimad Bhagavatam. They adore the holy name. They are famous for their chanting of Krishna's holy name. So this is, in short, the Bhagavad Dharma, as Prabhupada explained, the religion of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada said it's basically two things. The preaching of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. This is the meaning of Bhagavad Dharma. We sometimes hear this term. We read it in Prabhupada's purports, Bhagavad Dharma. What does it mean? It's basically two things. The hearing, chanting, and preaching of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting of Hare Krishna, they're on the exact same level. That means the topmost level of transcendental importance. Because both Bhagavatam and the holy name of the Lord are Krishna's appearance in spiritual sound vibration. And as I said, actually Bhagavatam is also Sankirtan. It's glorification of the holy name of the Lord by explaining to us what these holy names mean, what they signify. You see, so many holy names are there, and we can rattle them off. Yes, Trivikram, but who knows what it means? How we find out what the holy name Trivikram means? That is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So then Raghunath Das Goswami goes on to say that even if the holy name of the Lord is spoken only once, or even if it's spoken disrespectfully, that is enough to end the material existence of the living entity. He says even the dim light of the holy name of the Lord, gives the sight of bhakti to the blind. So this dim light, this is referring to nama bhas, name, abhas means reflection. So we were speaking yesterday that we are sadhakas, we are practicing devotional service. We are not actually on the level of pure devotional service, of mature devotional service. We are practicing, we are following the real devotees and trying to become like that. So similarly, our chanting, we're not chanting Shuddhanam at this stage. We're not chanting the pure name of Krishna, because if we were, then we would have, with every Krishna that we uttered, we would have direct realization that this name and the Lord are the same. We would actually realize Krishna in person through that vibration of the holy name. But we're not doing that. So what we are chanting is called Nama Bhas. It is the reflection of the holy name. And this is what Raghunath Das Goswami means by saying the dim light. It's like in the early morning, you see on the eastern horizon the light of the sun. You do not yet see the sun. But that light of the rising sun is enough. You see, it dispels the darkness. You can see. As soon as that light is there on the horizon, you can see everything very nicely. The sun comes up late here now, so you have ample experience of that. Helsinki city is already active at the time the sun is coming up. People are out. But still at 6 o'clock it's very dark. It's like the middle of the night at 6 o'clock. But around 7 o'clock or so, then the eastern sky becomes light and you can see the city. You see, all the lights go up. No more need of the street lights. So Raghunath Das Goswami says, even at this stage, Namabhas, that stage is, we are blind, but it is giving us the light of bhakti yoga so that we can see our way back home, back to Godhead. And then he says that meditation on Brahman, one who becomes absorbed, meditating on the impersonal Brahman, merges his consciousness into the light of the Brahma-jyoti. Even if he does that, that will not free him from his past karma. But with the appearance of the holy name, that immediately makes all karma disappear. Just by the holy name of the Lord appearing in our life. Then he goes on to say that, this is a point I made already, the holy names are the codified pastimes of the Lord. And he gives nice examples. Agha-damana. Krishna has the name Agha-damana. He who put down, damana means he subdued the Agha-sura demon. And of course, Yashoda-nandana. The son of Yashoda, Nanda Sunu, the son of Nanda Maharaj, and Gopi Chandra, the moon among the gopis, Vrindavan Indra, the lord of Vrindavan. So, Krishna has unlimited holy names, and all of them are finally signifying his pastimes. So by chanting the holy names of the Lord, becoming absorbed in these names, developing a taste for these names, then we are simultaneously becoming qualified to enter into Krishna's pastimes. Then he says that the holy name of the Lord has, the Nam-prabhu, the holy name, has two features. And these two features are Vacha and Vachakam. So Vacha means that Krishna himself, Krishna as we see him, Shamsundar, blue, playing the flute. That is the form of the holy name. But Vachakam means the sound of the name. You see? Krishna, Krishna as we see him in his form, that is the vachya feature of the holy name. And vachyakam means the sound Krishna. Bhagavad Goswami, Das Goswami says something very interesting. He says that the vachyakam, the sound of the holy name, is more merciful than the form of the holy name. Because we may have committed offenses, we may be committing offenses to the form of the Lord. For instance, in deity worship, one may commit offenses to the holy name, but one becomes to the form of the Lord, but one becomes relieved of those offenses by chanting the holy name. So the sound vibration, Krishna's incarnation of sound, is more merciful than even his form. And then he concludes that not only does the holy name destroy all sins, but he says something very nice. Ramyachid Ganasukha Swarup. The holy name is the form of, Ramya means charming, see, Swarup means form. The holy name is the form, Swarup, of what? Ramya, charming, Chit, pure, spiritual, Gana, intense, concentrated, Sukha means happiness, bliss. So, it's not simply that by chanting the holy name we destroy our past sins, but also we then can taste the most wonderful, intense, pure, non-material, charming bliss. The more we chant, the more we become purified, then the more we will taste this bliss of direct association with Krishna. Hare Krishna, any questions? Yes?
Perhaps I've been wondering, there's so many people who have chanted the holy name of the Lord, but still there's not so many people who come to the temple, and so I was thinking, is it like a process of many lifetimes that they come to the point that they really take up the devotional service? Or how can we understand?
Yes, that is there, but also we have to remember that Krishna's mercy works according to Krishna's plan. Prabhupada once said, you have your plan, I have my plan, Krishna has his plan. So, yes, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we have our plan for preaching and making devotees, but we ought not to think that this is the only manifestation of Krishna's plan for delivering the conditioned souls. So, it's not simply that those who come to the temple move in, become full-time devotees. It's not that they're the only ones, you know, out of the whole population who are achieving liberation. Others who are chanting the holy name now and again, or even only once, they may also go back home, back to Godhead. They may get there before we get there. Of course, we don't know who those persons are, but we should not, you know, in our mind, minimize the power of the holy name and the power of Krishna's mercy. Krishna's mercy is, what is that? Krishna Kripa Balishta. Krishna's mercy is stronger than anything, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declares. Krishna Kripa Balishta, stronger than anything. So, the spreading of the holy name, as you say, as you have rightly said, so many, many, many people in this world, even without knowing what it is, they have heard the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, they have said Hare Krishna, or Even as it is explained, even Goddess Saraswati, because she's the goddess of speech, so she is conspiring with the Sankirtan movement. She has a conspiracy on the side of the Sankirtan movement to induce people to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra while speaking their own ordinary worldly language. The syllables in different languages come together to form in speech, like the holy name Rama, you see, or Krishna. There's a town in Serbia called Mala Krishna. So, people who live in that town or are going to visit that town or see the town on the map, they're saying Krishna. They're saying, and they don't know what the significance of the name is. They just think it's a town. But in so many ways, in all the different languages, syllables come together in speech and the holy name appears. And Chaitanya Charitamrita says, just gives the example, just like a Muslim who is killed by a boar, a wild forest pig, you know, the big tusks. They're very dangerous animals. And pigs are considered most unclean by the Muslims. So to die by being killed by a pig, that's the worst kind of death a Muslim can have. So this description given in Chaitanya Charitamrita of a Muslim being killed by a pig in that way, and then in his last moments, because it's so horrible, so he cries out, there's a Arabic word for condemned, haram, you see. So when something is, like we might say, asuchi or muchi, you know, something very impure, we have these Sanskrit terms. Oh, that's muchi, don't touch it. So haram is similar. So he's dying and he calls out, haram, haram, haram. Oh my dear Lord Ramachandra. And he's delivered. He goes back home, back to Godhead. His whole life he was, you know, doing whatever Muslims do. They eat meat, compared to Vaishnava principles, it's very, very low. Actually, abominable status of life. But he called out haram, just intending to say, my death is very horrible. How unfortunate I am. But he's delivered. So you see, this is going on. And so the Hare Krishna movement is, of course, an important generating point for this influence throughout the world, but we shouldn't measure the progress of this movement by counting up how many devotees are in the temple. Of course, that is our program. I'm not saying then we should just say it's not important. We can just close the temple. No, the temple is important, and that is our service to Krishna. So naturally, we should want more and more devotees to come. That is right and proper. We have such a big mission, and we need as many devotees as possible. But Krishna's mercy is there, you see. And just like we say, when the books are going out, these books also, it's like they have a life of their own. They pass from hand to hand to hand. And so many wonderful stories are there about Prabhupada's books. So, Prabhupada is preaching. Prabhupada is preaching. You see, he continues to preach. Quite independent of our temples and, you know, that program. Prabhupada himself is just going through the world and preaching. One of my godbrothers told the most wonderful story of how he came in contact with Bhagavad Gita. He actually was in the East Village in New York. When Prabhupada came, he was there in 1965, 1966. He was a real young guy. He was only about 16 years old, and he was a guitarist, so he was playing in some rock and roll band, and he was really part of the scene. He had, you know, long hair down to his elbows and playing guitar and He knew Jimi Hendrix before Jimi Hendrix was famous. Jimi Hendrix also used to live in the village. So they knew each other. And so then he went with a friend out in Vermont, that's up north in the countryside. And they had one little cottage in the middle of the forest. And they went there, you know, just to take a lot of drugs for many days, just to cut themselves off from the world and just take drugs. You know, all alone. So they were doing that, and he had some kind of violent reaction to the drug. Oh yeah, the other thing I wanted to say is important. When he was in, as a resident of the village, so he was there when Prabhupada started ISKCON. And he, with his friends, he used to walk in front of the 26th Second Avenue First Nationalist Gift Center of ISKCON. But they would walk by and they would look in the window and see the pictures and the devotees. And, you know, then they would make some crazy sound like, ah, and run away. You know? They were just mocking it, you know. They were just, again, something crazy for them. They had no interest in Krishna consciousness. So anyway, when he was up there in this house, this cottage in the middle of the forest up north, he had this violent reaction from the drugs, and he couldn't breathe properly. He had lost, you know, the natural control over his breathing. So he had to purposefully each breath concentrate to take it, and he could only very, you know, like little gasp of air, and that's all he could do. Otherwise, it was, you know, that whole system had stopped. His breathing had just practically stopped. And he was just laying on this bed, gasping for air. And so his friend was very concerned. And in the meantime, while they were in that cottage, there was a big snow. So snow had fallen in the night, and there was 1 meter high snow all around in the middle of the woods. So his friend had to trudge some miles to the woods to get help. And he was laying there like this. And in that cottage, there was a bookshelf. And there were some books, different books. And he saw there was one blue book. It was the old Macmillan, original Macmillan edition of Bhagavad Gita. So, and somehow that book was shining. The other books looked very, this book was very bright. So he used it. And he was laying there going, and he read the whole Gita from cover to cover. And he said, I never ever read a book like that before. I was just like, you know, practically eating the book, you know, absorbing it every page. And when help finally came, he got back his breath, and he left that place. He got on a train, he went down to New York, because in the book there was the phone number and address of the temple. He went into New York City, and he went to a phone booth, he dialed that number, and someone answered, Hare Krishna, this is the ISKCON Temple, New York City. And he said, can I join? He became a devotee, just like that. So these books have their, also, they have their own power, their own program for making devotees. And there's so many, I've heard, you know, other such stories like that. So these books, you know, that book, who bought that book? Who knows? You know, how did it end up in this little cottage in the middle of the woods in Vermont somewhere? Who knows? But there it was, and just for the right person, you see. It was actually facing death. He's my friend, Hasigrami, old friend. And he told me, actually, when he couldn't breathe, he actually became close to unconsciousness, because his breath was coming so hard. He was hardly getting oxygen, and he started to black out. And he got really scared, because he said, although I didn't know what they were, I had no idea, you know, philosophically what they were. He said I could actually feel and hear the Yamadutas. They were all around me. They were just waiting for me to leave my body. I could feel them. And I was so scared. That's why he was reading like that. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, can you comment that I found it interesting statement of Srila Bhakti and Saraswati that if the desire for fruitive activities reminds it, means that person haven't tended even once the name of Krishna.
What is that? The desire for fruitive activities?
It remains. If we still have the desire for fruitive activities, it means that we have not even chanted to once the name of Krishna.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, there's chanting and there's chanting. So the real chanting is the Shudanam level. That's without any offenses. So there's Abhas Nam. There are offenses also, but they're receding. And then there's Namaparat. That means one is actually chanting, maintaining the offenses. He's chanting in such a way to maintain those offenses. So neither Namaparat nor even Namabhas is the real chanting, like I said. Namabhas is better than Namaparat, but it is still a reflection of all. It's only when we come to Shudanam, no offenses, that there is the real chanting. So that's the sense of that.
Yes. Very much related to the previous story you mentioned about how the books are making devotees say, some years back I was in the Prabhupada Samadhi, and Prabhupada Samadhi, the Prabhupada is, you know, like, one can feel Prabhupada is quite near. It's like, strong experience. And I like a prayer, which is, you know, we're showing to Srila Prabhupada with thankfulness that, you know, we can participate this moment. Like, it seems to be like, just the right time for us to come here. And, well, that was just like, you know, thanks to Srila Prabhupada. And then I was quite clear, I'm not esoteric type of person like that. So it was clear. Srila Prabhupada's voice, he said that, I'm sending all these devotees according to my schedule, according to my timetable. And it was very clear, it was not an hallucination. So I was thinking, what did Srila Prabhupada mean? It's like that everyone is coming because of this mess, you know. Because we can see that so many are reading the books and coming. I don't know whether I like your comment, but it's
well, what I would say is that, you see, there's Guru Tattva and then there's Andre Charya Tattva. So the Samstapaka Charya, the founder of Charya, of a mission like ISKCON, Sampradayic mission, is even above the Guru Tattva. And this is understood, explained in this way in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, about the position of Ramanuja Charya in their Sampradaya, the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. So he is the Udharaka. They have this term for him in Sanskrit that means he is the deliverer of everyone. Of course, Ramanujacharya, he lived more than a thousand years ago. But their understanding is that that whole time down to now, anyone who has been delivered in that Sampradaya, the Sri Sampradaya, that deliverance was done by Ramanujacharya, because he's the founder of Charya. And the spiritual masters in the line, of course, they have their initiating Diksha and instructing Shiksha gurus also, just like in Asampradaya. They're called Upakaraka, they're helpers of Sri Pada Ramanujacharya, the founder of Charya. So, I have often said this, mentioned this in classes, and in Mayapur also. Always the ISKCON devotees, when they hear this, they become very happy. They like this explanation. They understand that for us, that is Srila Prabhupada's position. That anyone, whether now or 500 years from now or for the next 10,000 years, yes, we understand ISKCON is going to grow, Krishna consciousness will grow, then anyone who is becoming a devotee, becoming delivered from this material world, that is primarily due to the mercy of the founder of Charya. And the others are helping. The others who are involved, you know, the preaching and initiating and giving instruction and all of that, they're assisting, but the main, say, current of mercy, the main current of mercy is coming from Prabhupada. Anything else? Yes?
Master talked about the course of the Holy Name, but Srila Prabhupada, he says in his commentaries of the Holy Name that one should avoid learning problems from the non-devotees, it's poisonous life, being oppressed by servants.
Yes. Well, that means, you see, if you hear from the non-devotee, the person who is not inclined actually to surrender to Krishna, but for some reason or other is still apparently giving the holy name, then what you're receiving from such a person is nama parad. And so this nama parad means that type of chanting which is watering the other bijas in the heart besides the bhakti lata. As the bhakti lata, actually, if you see, if you receive the holy name, you receive the name of Krishna from someone who is not a devotee, that means that the bhakti lata will not come with the holy name. You see, the seed of devotion won't even be there. So then the holy name will just be encouraging the other, the kama bija, the seed of lust, karma bija, the seed of fruitive activities, jnana bija, the seed of speculative knowledge, these kind of bijas. And that means the whole, then one's development from that type of chanting goes in a whole different direction than the direction given by this, by the bona fide parampara, through which we get the real holy name with the seed of bhakti. So, yes, that is the poisonous effect. They think that they're chanting. You see, I had some experience of this many years ago. That when I was with Vishnu Jana Maharaj at his Radha Damodara party, we came to a 3-day so-called spiritual festival. This was in a place called Davis, California. There's the University of California branch. This university, UCLA, or UC, University of California, it has different branches throughout the state. University of California is a very important university, one of the prestigious universities. So there's a campus at a place called Davis, which is a kind of a country place. It's like a farming area. And very nice, very... very beautiful, actually. So, we went to this campus, and there was all kinds of, you know, spiritual groups there. And some big names. There was Baba Ram Das, who wrote that book, Be Here Now. He was there. There was Swami Muktananda, who probably nobody knows him now, but at that time he was a big name in what we used to call bogi yoga. So it was really funny. I used to see him. He was dressed as a sannyasi, Mayavadi sannyasi, and he had his American girlfriend with him. So these things were going on, and then there was one group of young people who came to this festival, and they were coming often to our Radha Damodar ensemble set up. We were serving prasadam, having this bhajan that Vishnu Janam Maharaj used to do, bhajan group. And Radha Damodar deities on display, and a stand for selling books and incense and other things. So there was a group of young people, you know, hippie type of people. And they were kind of always there on the grass nearby, watching what we were, kind of like appreciating us. And I noticed they had guitars and they were chanting Govinda Jaya Jaya among themselves and other names of Krishna. But, you know, when I talked to them, then they were really into sense gratification. And they were also inviting devotees to come engage in sense gratification with them. So we had to kind of like warn the Prabhus, you know, don't associate with them too much, but they're really, you know. So, but they were kind of nice, you know, I mean, they were nice to us, there was no offensiveness. And they were chanting, but their understanding of chanting was so different, you know, taking them in a whole other direction. And that's when I really realized about this warning. Because I don't even know from whom they got Govinda Jaya Jaya, these other things that they were chanting. So I suppose I didn't get into it with them, because they were so, you know, as soon as you mixed with them, then they were offering, you know, smokes and marijuana, or, you know, go off in the woods and have some illicit sex. Or so, you know, they were totally in this, you know, in this con. They thought that was all spiritual. And so you couldn't, it was very difficult to associate with them. Because, you know, they're thinking, well, you know, you're the same as us because you chant Hare Krishna too. So come on, let's go. So I don't know from where they got the name, but obviously it wasn't from a devotee of Krishna. And that's when I really understood so clearly that what you're saying, milk touched by the lips of a serpent has a poisonous effect. Because what they were developing from their chanting is totally at odds with Krishna consciousness. And yet they were chanting, you know, and seemed to enjoy it. And when you see them chanting, you think, oh, they're nice people. But they were going deeper and deeper into Maya. Yes?
What about those people who get Prabhupada's books, read about it, and then tell it forward to other people, but not being themselves seriously taking it?
Well, they're beginning their spiritual life, and especially if they give the book to someone else. That's the beginning of their preaching career. they're not, of course, conscious really of what they're doing. They're not conscious of the significance of the books or the significance of giving Prabhupada's book to someone else, but they've come in touch with Prabhupada, and so they're on his list. Like you said, according to my schedule, I'm sending them. So they're on the list, they're on the waiting list.
Even if they tell it for us, not giving the book, but like giving their explanation of what is Hare Krishna philosophy, Hare Krishna mantra.
They're in ignorance. The thing is if it's coming from Prabhupada, this is the point. If it's coming from Prabhupada, then it's the real thing. It's the seed of the real thing. They're in ignorance, they don't understand it properly. That's another thing, of course. You see. So, but with good association, they could understand. And the fact that they've gotten the seed from Prabhupada means it will grow into good association sooner or later. But if it comes from someone else, you know, some manda will be there. It means the seed of pure devotion is not there at all. Yes?
Maharaj, the yogis can, by practice, feel the super soul in their heart. So is there someday able for people like us to see what's going on here when we chant?
Well, Prabhupada said that is actually the goal of the Krishna consciousness movement. Now, and not exactly simply like the yogis, just to have this mystical darshan of the Paramatma. Because in this mystic yoga approach to realization of the Paramatma, there is still some touch of material interest. These yogis are very interested in siddhis, in mystic powers. And these mystic powers, the eight mystic powers, they're their creative energies of the Paramatma. They're actually personalities who are always with the Paramatma. And through these personalities, the Paramatma or the Vishnu, Mahapurush, he's creating, maintaining and destroying the universe. So these yogis, they're inclined, you know, to want to gain these mystic powers for themselves. So when if they're successful in their yoga mysticism, they can have darshan of Paramatma, but it is a neutral relationship. They're simply seeing him, and of course they're experiencing the bliss of liberation in seeing him. But this is still not an active relationship. You see, they're seeing and his glories and his bliss streaming from his form, and they're, you know, they're kind of bathing in that darshan, and there are mystic powers there, you know. They're drawn to want to accept these mystic powers for themselves. And then when they get in that mentality, then desiring to have mystic powers, then they can at that stage make a mistake of thinking they are Paramatma, that form is their form, they are one with Paramatma, merging into Paramatma, something like that. Something that is ultimately impersonal. Even though to see Paramatma is, you're seeing a personal form. But because of that interest they have in mystic powers, they may yet fall back into impersonalism. Thinking, now I am Paramatma. By realizing this, I am Paramatma, I am Vishnu, I am as good as Vishnu. So for the devotee, Srila Prabhupada says, yes, we also want to be connected to Paramatma, but Prabhupada says, taking dictation, this is something much more. This means the Lord is speaking to us from within, directing our activities, telling us what to do, and we follow that, his order. Then we are united with Paramatma, not in this mystical sense, which is, Prabhupada once said, I heard from one of my god brothers, Prabhupada once said, mystic means misty. There's an English word, misty, which means like when there's a mist in the air, and you don't see things clearly, like a fog, you see? Then you don't see things clearly anymore. So because they have this mystical interest for mystical powers, then they actually do not have a clear understanding of Paramatma, even though they may have his darshan. And that's why they make these confusions, that I am Paramatma, and so on. But the devotee becomes united with him, not through this mystical process, which is unclear, misleading, where one may think, now I am the Lord, I am one with him, identically. One becomes united with the Paramatma in service. He is the master, we are the servant. He is giving the order, we are carrying out the order. So that relationship is in terms of bhakti yoga. So generally you see that the one who takes to that method, mystic yoga method of realizing Paramatma, it means that his intention is not to serve the Lord. That's why he's going that way. You see? That very, very difficult way. It's very, very, very difficult way. And he's taking all this trouble because he doesn't want to be a devotee. He wants to have some big, you know, spiritual attainment to become known as someone very advanced and transcendental, but he doesn't want to just be a devotee. And so Krishna reciprocates. In 12th chapter of Gita, he declares, he reciprocates also with the impersonalists. He says they're also trying to achieve me, but by an impersonal means. So that Jyoti, Brahma Jyoti, is also a feature of Krishna for them, and the Paramatma is a feature of Krishna for another kind of transcendentalist non-devotee. But what does he say in the 18th chapter, Bhakti Mama Vijayati? Yavanyashchasmi tatva, to know me as I am, in truth, one must be a devotee.
Is it true that in some cases the holy man can, instead of glorifying the person, be taking to other wrong directions?
It's not the holy name. Don't blame Krishna. That is a choice of the living entity. You see, we've been talking about those who are chanting the holy name for another purpose than devotional service. So here I was just telling him an example, the mystic yogis. They're going through all that trouble to realize the form of the Lord in the heart, but for another purpose than simply to surrender to him and serve him. They have another plan in mind. And because Krishna is, Prabhupada said, like a father to everyone, so those who are approaching him, even with these purposes, he reciprocates. He gives them what they want. But what they, if he doesn't give himself like he gives to the devotees, to the devotees he gives himself. To others then he's giving some, you know, liberation, mystic power, or for the karmis, facility for sense gratification, even for the demons. You see? Demons may worship him for some form of him, or some power. So when he gives them, sooner or later that will be their destruction. But it's their fault. It's not. The blame is not on him. He's giving them what they want. They want this, and then they're going to go misuse it. You see? They're following their blind material desires. They do all this tapasya to receive some blessing from the Lord, and when they get it, and then they turn away from the Lord, you know, business done. Okay, I got what I want. And then their material desires manifest fully. And that is what will destroy them. So yes, there are persons who chant the holy names force material aims, material goals. There's some Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about this in Harinam Chintamani. If this is actually offensive chanting, like the impersonalist. The impersonalist may take up the holy name of the Lord, chanting the holy name of the Lord, but his intention is to achieve impersonal liberation in Brahma Jyoti. This is actually an aparadha against the holy name. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if you'll get that, that's the reward for his aparadha. He won't keep Krishna. You see? And he's getting what he wants. He's happy when he sees those rays of Brahman coming out of the darkness and sweeping over him and absorbing him. He's totally happy. He died, I got what I want. But from a devotee's point of view, you know, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, this is worse than hell. A devotee would never take that. But he's an aparadhi. So he gets that, and that's what he wants. He's satisfied. He thinks he's satisfied. Or someone wants sense gratification, like the Prakriti Sajjas. They chant the holy name of the Lord simply as a means of getting sense gratification. We don't want to talk about them in detail, but in Bengali society, these Sahajas, that's what they do. They gain a kind of worldly respect, worldly position in society from being professional chanters, chanting very beautifully, playing very beautifully, putting on a display of ecstasy. And people like that, and you know, they're foolish people, and they then put themselves at the disposal of these so-called saints. Whatever you want, we'll give you. And so they ask for BD or something, smoke. They ask for a meal of fish. They ask for wine, you know, things like that. And it will be given to them very easily because of their chanting. In this social milieu, the chanting is a type of entertainment. It's these bowls, they're called bowls of Bengal, these professional chanters, musicians. It's considered in Bengal, it's like folk music, Bengali folk music, you know. So it's a totally, you know, like a mundane understanding. And the bowls are folk musicians. And people like them, you know, hire them to perform. And they're just low-class sense gratifiers. So that's the motive they have for chanting Hare Krishna, sense gratification. And they get it. But don't blame the holy name for that. They've taken the holy name and they're using it. Just like in religions. I mean, there's so many religions. Ultimately, there's only one God. There's only one God, Krishna. Only one God. But you look at these different religions, and they have their different so-called regulative principles. You know. So, before you can eat meat, you have to cut the throat of the animal and let all the blood run out of its neck. Then you can eat. Where did that come from? See? That's perverted, but they're doing it in the name of God. So, this is what happens when Dharma, you know, becomes infested with the modes of material nature. And all these different things going on in the name of religion and the name of God are there. But that's due to the desires of the human beings. They have their desires, they don't want to give them up. And they have just this much intelligence to understand that if, you know, if God is there, if God is all powerful, then He's the one I should go to fulfill my desires. That's the sort of the limit of their piety. Yeah?
Srila Prabhupada is mentioning Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita could be remembered. He's mentioning that there are devotees or so-called devotees who are looking like devotees, but they are Kali's servants. Kali devotees.
Kali Chila.
So what kind of practice or symptoms does that kind of phenomenon have?
Anything that's not in the line of acharyas. You see, because it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur who revived, who brought before everyone's view what is the real movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It had kind of gone, it was there, but it had kind of gone, you know, it had become obscured. Because, as Prabhupada said in the lecture, about 250 years ago, so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was 500 years ago, so about the halfway point from then to now, then these sahajas, prakriti sahajas started to come up, these so-called devotees, so-called Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And from that time they just got more and more and more, and then by the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the 1800s, it was lost to the public eye. There were great personalities like Jagannath Das Babaji and others who were pure representatives of Lord Chaitanya's movement. But as far as what the public could see, the public eye, they could only see these sahajas. They were the ones who were active. They were the ones who were doing the Nama Sankirtan in the street, you see, before the public eye. And so they were thinking, this is Lord Chaitanya's movement. These kind of people who chant Hare Krishna, you know, like a kind of spiritual hippie. That's what a Baal is. You know, long hair and long beard, and they dress in a Baal's mix up. You know, they dress some items of their clothes are like Vaishnavas, like maybe a dhoti, but then they'll wear the long shirt of a Muslim. You know, they deliberately. You know, like hippies, you know. And so this is what they thought is a devotee, you know, of Krishna, follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, someone like that, with beedi or worse, marijuana cigarette in the mouth and smoking chilam, hashish. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he brought from out of that, before the public eye, the real movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so from Bhaktivinoda Thakur to Srila Gokishwara Das Babaji to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to Srila Prabhupada, this is the line of the real Sampradaya. So anything that is not that is deviant. And that you have going on, you know. I've seen on the internet, there's websites run by a certain person who lives in Finland, by the way. He's managing this website. There are many, many members. And they all, many of them are claiming to be what they call traditional Vaishnavas, traditional Gaudiya Vaishnavas, which means not followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Srila Prabhupada, but the kind you see in the, you know, in the villages of Bengal. And, they have this vision that, yes, the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is very broad. There are so many, many gurus, and so many, many, many ways of serving Krishna. And, but this is, what Chaitanya's movement is what? The Sankirtan movement. There must be Sankirtan. You see? And it is Mahasankirtan. It is not just, you know, some little ching, 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 ching once in a while, a few people gathered around in a huddle chanting. This is being intended to flood the whole world. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's vision. So this we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada. This is the Sankirtan mission, as Mahaprabhu intended. And anything else, I mean, of course, we, on the other side, we don't need to criticize, we don't need to point fingers and, you know, put them down. There's no need to do that, because we should be glad anyone is taking up Krishna consciousness. But when they go that way, then it's clear what they are. They make themselves clear what they are. They're not preaching, they're not pushing on this movement to the world. They're not, as Prabhupada did. Prabhupada, he once said that his mission was to describe the Sankirtan mission as interfering with the materialistic direction of the society. Interfering, you know, it means it comes in and disturbs, makes a disturbance, disturbs them in their dream of sense pleasure. And that Prabhupada used to do. Prabhupada's, like for instance, Prabhupada's challenging of scientists and wanting to have a Bhaktivedanta Institute to defy the scientific theories that are hanging over this world, all these false materialistic theories. This is unique. I mean, there is, of course, in the same what they call Saraswat family, the line of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you find Gaudiya Math, different branches of the Gaudiya Math. And of course they are much, much closer to what ISKCON is than all these, what's going on in the villages, that so-called traditional Gaudiya Vaishnavism of the family, it's family gurus, you see. The one who's a guru, he's a guru because his father was a guru. This is Jata Goshai, born Goswami. And they're called Goswami, they're grihastas, householders, who have the family name Goswami. And they're addressed as Prabhupada and such titles like that. And they live in some village, and they just initiate everyone in the village. And that's how they're a guru. And everyone takes initiation from them, because my father took initiation from his father, so I'm going to take initiation from him. This is our village custom. And then he has a son, and that son will be the next guru, and my son will take initiation from him. So the Gaudiya Math is, you know, totally different from that. But then we see, if you look at the level of preaching enthusiasm, you don't find anyone like Prabhupada who is now some Gaudiya Math gurus after Prabhupada, they also come to the West. It seems mostly to just reinitiate ex-ISKCON members, people who became devotees from ISKCON. And then they, for some reason or other, they got a little disappointed and went to the side a little bit, then they get reinitiated by someone from the Gaudiya Math. But we don't find these Gaudiya Math sannyasis interfering, you know, challenging scientists, debating them, calling them rascal, like Prabhupada did. So, this is the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Mahaprabhu. That's what Prabhupada stressed so much, the preaching. Alright, then we'll stop here. Thank you very much to the Prabhupada Kijar.